WGNS, Murfreesboro.
This is FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. Rutherford County's Place to Talk.
Hip hip hooray, let's give a cheer. It's 9 a.m., the signal's clear. Our favorite host is in the chair. The Truman Show is on the air.
It's the Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County.
The Truman Show is on the air. The Truman Show is on the air.
Now your host, Truman Jones.
I am going to have that song added on to for Tuesdays when you're on, Greg, because it's actually your show, Greg Tucker's show, on Tuesdays.
Well, on some Tuesdays there's an awful lot of music, and I didn't bring my
Well, that's John Blankenship. Oh, okay. But yeah. But you do have music also. I mean, when you're talking about past and history, it does have a kind of a musical.
It has a rhythm and a cadence to it.
Yeah, it really does. And you brought me a Christmas gift this morning, and I am absolutely tickled to death with it. And I think you told me it came from the Jerry Warner collection.
Absolutely, yeah. Which is a resource for the whole community. Jerry is a fascinating personality in his own right, former chemistry teacher, I think, at Central back in the 50s and 60s. But each one of the items, you can describe it, but each one of the items represents 12 dirty ice cream cup tops that Jerry collected from the trash behind the stores and around the stores all over town. Said he was riding on his bicycle about 8 or 10 years old. And every time he could get 12, he could go buy the old Consumer Supply, which was our ice cream manufacturer back in the 30s, and exchange them for a picture of his choice. And
wow.
These are six of those out of about 65 to 70 that he collected. You can do your math and see how many cup tops. He says he'd gather them up, and then he'd take them home and have to wash them, get the dirt and the ice cream off of them, and then go exchange them.
There was actually two areas. One was our stars that were in the Western movies, and the other one was basically baseball stars back then, because you would get those off of the little bubble gum cards.
Yeah.
And of course, their worth grew in value thousands of times more than
I wish we could find some of the actual ice cream cup lids. There's some in circulation, but here, when consumers started, first, of course, they were just collecting the ice cream lids because they had a picture, usually just a black and white picture of a star. But then when they began working the exchange, a further promotion, all those lids were taken back in and destroyed. In exchange for what were actually 8x10 or 9x12 color photos of the... It began with movie stars, and of course, among the movie stars in the 30s, the Western, the cowboy stars were...
All the kids loved the Western.
Particularly, you know, a 10-year-old boy collecting, and they had, I guess, about a third of the collectible pictures were the cowboy stars, the Western stars, and... obviously, a few women were in there, too, some of those that played opposite the lead man.
Well, now, the present you brought me is just out of this world. There's no way I could ever thank you enough for this, because you've got a great frame, and there's six of the big-time cowboys that I grew up around. And, of course, one of them is Roy Rogers. And great picture of Roy. I mean, you can tell. Oh, he's just wet behind the ears here.
Oh, yeah. These are all very young pictures because they would have been mid-30s. And Roy, over time, became and has the record. He was in 12 different poses on the ice cream cups in the pictures. Just he was so popular that they kept changing the pose. And I think the nearest to him, somebody else had maybe 8. But he was in 12 different pictures.
I wonder what these guys made off of that posing to have these pictures on there, because that was a big sale for the ice cream company, because you've got the great idols for the people that are eating the ice cream, the kids.
Well, Dixie Cup, the Dixie, later called the Dixie Cup Company, came up with the idea. And what's particularly interesting is, remember back in the early 30s when this started, the stars that we knew as the movie stars actually belonged to the studios. Mm-hmm. They would make a contract with the studio.
Didn't make a whole lot of money.
Made what I guess they thought was good money at the time, but they had no rights in terms of performance except through the studio. So the Dixie Cup Company went to MGM, which at the time was probably the biggest, and proposed this idea. And MGM saw the potential and gave them the right to use pictures of any of their troupe of stars.
Hmm.
So the rights to use the pictures came free to the ice cream company. But then, of course, they start putting them out on the ice cream tops, the cups, and you know, promoted the stars as well as sold more ice cream. And as I said, Consumers Supply here, owned by, in part, Al D. McKnight, our mayor back in the 1920s, mm-hmm. one of the owners, A.L. Todd, another one. Well, they, of course, had the benefit of the their wholesale. They were wholesalers. Mm-hmm. They manufactured the ice cream and sold it to all the little stores and joints and whatever around town. Advantage to them. The lids themselves boosted sales. But then when that began to run down, then they came out with this second-tier promotion, which was exchange your lids and you'll get color pictures. So they kept it going up until, it went through the... During the war, they shifted from pictures of stars and such to military pictures.
Mm.
And these are rare. I've only seen about three or four of them, but Sherman tanks and, you know, the airplanes and things like that during the war to promote the war effort.
Now, as an attorney, would you have been willing to represent all these cowboy stars? Were they getting any royalties from that?
No, the contracts back then were pretty good contracts, at least as the status of the law was then. That wasn't until Roy's initial contract ran out, Roy Rogers, for instance, that he turned himself into an industry. Uh-huh. And, of course, then guys like Rogers, Gene Autry, mm-hmm. you know, made a whole lot of money for themselves. But some of these, like Bob Steele, who appeared in Lord Have Mercy, must have been in three dozen or more different cowboy. I suspect that his income wouldn't be impressive to us today compared to what we know some of them make now.
Well, you've got Hoot Gibson, not the space pioneer, but you've got Hoot Gibson, one of the original cowboy stars.
I always say the original Hoot Gibson.
Yeah, the original Hoot. And Hopalong Cassidy, Hoppy. This is before he became Hopalong Cassidy.
Yeah, William Boyd.
John Wayne, and that was when he was making the B pictures.
Yeah, he probably had the most staying power of any of them, I think, because, you know, he was a big star all the way up until his death.
My favorite male star of all time is John Wayne.
Is that right?
And I've had a lot of great ones. I'm a movie buff, as you know.
Well, I think I had a hint of that. That's one reason he's on the...
Thank you.
On the frame.
And Froggy Milhouse.
Smiley Burnett.
Smiley Burnett. I mean, he was a great actor. It was the guys like Smiley, Gabby Hayes, and those that really made the pictures fun. I mean, you had all this excitement was going on, the chases on horseback and all that stuff. But there was something about those characters, actors, like those.
Well,
and you know, Gabby Hayes made more money than Roy did by far.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
Interesting in the collection, Smiley Burnett is the only, what would you say, sidekick.
Yeah.
Among all the pictures, all the others.
Yeah, because Bob Steele was a big star at that time.
Yeah, yeah. And in Jerry Warner's collection, Burnett is the only what I'd call a sidekick. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether that reflects the little boy collecting his preferences, it could well be, or whether Smiley just was the only one who rose to that level among the sidekicks, so to speak, the supporting actors.
You know, I am so proud of this. And one thing I'm thinking about, this would have, what you've done here, this group in the frame, would have been perfect in your house where you've got some of that neat stuff sitting on your wall. And you got the perfect lady at home that can put everything where it needs to go, and it's just perfect. And I know Ben, well, I'm not going to mention any of that. I guess I shouldn't.
You could hang it here at the studio, but no, I'd put a plaque on it so it doesn't disappear.
Now, you had this article.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago we wrote about this collection.
Yeah. And I don't know how many people, I'm not pushing anything at all, but I guess on your website, you've got this on your website, right?
It's up on the Rutherford County Historic Society website, yeah.
And it has a picture of the Consumers Supply Company there.
Right, founded in 1922, and that picture, I think, is probably close to the opening time. You see how they have arranged their pickup and delivery, milk pickup delivery trucks around it like they're showing them off. And the trucks themselves are interesting. They're probably on T-model frames. But if you look, they're both, I would call them a tank and truck, a tank and can truck, because in the center is a tank where they could, for those dairies around the area that were holding the milk in tanks and transferring it to the truck tank. But then around the side are those little slots where they can set in the milk cans for those who were still using the milk cans at the time.
You know, people that lived in that time, it was a simpler time. But they had to enjoy that. I mean, that was really, it was a great time for kids to grow up, wasn't it?
It was. And remember, this is, this company goes into the ice cream business 6 years before Carnation came to town. So this was a big employer and a big supporter of the dairy industry at the time. Probably the cheese factory, excuse me, the butter, the creamery, was right behind them. And
I was thinking about looking there because I think that building, I remember that building for some reason.
You remember the Consumers building?
Yeah.
Well, they shut down in the early 50s, and I have not been able to date exactly when the building disappeared, but of course it's gone now. The Creamery building is still there, and it was between the Creamery and the railroad.
Yeah, I'm looking at one of the pictures that you've got here, and it actually shows the tops of the ice cream, actually the lids on the Dixie cups. And those are really, really great pictures. I mean, they're still very well taken care of. And these are part of Jerry's collection, right? Jerry Warner's collection.
No, he didn't have any cup tops.
Those, he did not have any cup tops.
Those I had to run down. And, boy, if you want to try to buy some of those tops now, they'll get you.
Like a Mickey Mantle 1956.
Yeah, they really are. The innovation, though, that made it possible was wax paper. They didn't want to put the face up on the top because then you wouldn't buy the ice cream until you sure you had the one you wanted. They wanted you to buy and buy and buy trying to get the star you wanted. So the face picture was down towards the ice cream in the cup. But they didn't want the ice cream messing up the picture. So they apparently developed machinery that would lay a piece of round, what we'd call wax paper, between the ice cream and the picture. So when you peeled it off, there was your picture all clean and nice, and then you peeled off your wax paper to eat the ice cream. Hmm. And remember, a little wooden spoon came with each cup.
Remember.
Yeah.
Oh, me.
But, you know, of course, these things were all over the country. But here in Rutherford County, we had an ice cream manufacturer, Consumer Supply. Later changed their name to Consumers Ice Cream because that became their only real product in the later years. But Consumer Supply actually using our local dairy product, making the ice cream, packaging it, and distributing it all over Rutherford County, but then some in the surrounding counties as well.
And Jerry doesn't have a Dixie cup with a picture of Spence Edwards on the top of it, does he?
We could.
It would pack a wallop, I'll guarantee you.
Yeah, I was going to say, we ought to come up with something.
All right, we have a caller on the line, and since it's your show, they're calling you. Caller, welcome aboard with the Greg Tucker Show.
Well, good morning, Greg Tucker and Truman Jones.
Good morning.
John L. Beatty.
Of course.
I enjoyed the consumer's ice cream thing. It was in the paper there a week or two ago, whatever it was. But we sold milk at the old creamery, which another thing you might look up, Greg, was the first cooperative in the state of Tennessee came in 1915.
You're talking about,
but we would sell milk and go down because they were still making ice. And we still have, I don't know, a year or two ago, I'm out through the rest of the way, but ice barrels where they made ice in. And we used them for water barrels.
Mm-hmm.
After they'd rust inside, we'd throw them out and we'd get them. But ice cream was in a big cup, not the little bitty cups, and they were 10 cents. And you could get 25 pounds of ice for 10 cents. So for, we could take a quarter and get a dime cup of ice cream and a block of ice, enough to make our own ice cream when we got back home. But on the bottom, you had chocolate whirl, which was put in the bottom of the cup, and then the ice cream. And then they had cherry, and I think strawberry was kind of your choices, and then plain vanilla. But they were 10-cent cups where everything else were nickel cups. And you had those great big wide spoons. But we took milk every day or every other day. So very familiar with that. And also across the street, mentioned the co-op where there was a rec center that later became. But that's where the first Grove County co-op started.
Right, across the street.
That old building, that old warehouse over there.
Yeah, on West Main, across the street from the creamery, was the co-op location, Farmers Co-op.
Did I lose y'all?
No, we're here.
No, okay. Greg was just saying where exactly it was on West Main Street.
Oh, the co-op?
Yeah.
Straight across the street, from the creamery. It was this big, I think it was J.W. Fletcher owned that building. And it was a big lot, and the lot, Racquet Club, or no, something opened up as one of the first sports or recreation workout centers it was.
I belonged to that one.
I don't know, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah,
a long
longer
time
than that,
there.
Yeah.
But that's where Rutherford County Co-op was started. Mr. Percy Jarrett was the first manager of the co-op.
Now
he was, the Jarretts and all, they were all out of Salem.
You've got a long list of family history in that business, haven't you?
Yes. I just enjoy listening the other day to you and Bud and somebody else was on there, everything y'all was talking about, and even you just named off all my cowboys a while ago, Luke Gibson and Bob Steele, and Bob Steele was one of my favorites on those Western movies there.
Oh, yeah.
He was just good.
Help me out. I was talking to Greg before we went on the show, and of course, I knew Bob Steele as soon as I saw him. He was in a Humphrey Bogart Lauren Bacall movie many, many years ago that involved, she was a sister, and they were kind of wild sisters, and their dad, who had an illness, had to stay in a place where it was hot and had flowers and all that other stuff in it.
Bob Steele was the
Bob
bad
Steele
guy.
Was a bad guy. Do you remember that movie?
I remember it, yes. I remember one time when he was a bad guy.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you anything about the movie.
Well, it is a great movie, but I have drawn a blank on it for some reason.
Must have been the downside.
I remember everything that happened in the movie, but I can't think of the name of the movie.
Yeah, because I used to go over to the Roxy Theater over there on Saturdays.
That's where you used to go catch rats.
Continued episodes. don't know what, the 30 minutes, they quit, and you go back next Saturday and pick up where they left off. But you had to keep your feet up off the floor over there.
Yeah, you sure did. Hey, you could go varmint hunting there.
Yeah.
You know, those particular times, and Greg and I were talking about it, it's hard to believe how simple the times were. Now, they may not have been as simple and good for our parents, but I tell you what, as growing up a kid in the 40s and the 50s, it had to be the perfect time of any that I can ever remember.
Oh, yeah. We'd go down to the, because the switch engines ran all the time, L&N Railroad right there beside Consumer.
Yeah.
We'd go down there and see the train without two or three rigs. Little Brother Smith and Tommy Smith's daddy was an engineer on the switch engine.
And
go down there and hop the train right up and down the track with him. And you couldn't do that today, but
Walter Motto, you know,
each ice cream on a train were riding the switch engine.
We need you sitting up here with us, John L.
Well, that just happened. And I'll vote for Larry Stewart. I knew Larry when he came to being on your show.
Uh-huh.
I listened to every bit of that the other day. It was just so funny. I was enjoying it so much, I wouldn't even call in and interrupt y'all.
Well, he is so smart, especially when it comes to dealing with people and dealing with kids.
No doubt about it.
It's simple for him because it's the way it should be done.
Yeah, and he was like me. We was in college at the same time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You went to college?
Yeah, at MTSU.
Gosh, Larry looks a lot younger than you, John L.
He can't do, but we were there at the same time. He started early.
Well, you know he played ball with one of your schoolmates, Kenneth Lanham.
Yes, yes.
They all played at MTSU or MTSC. Yeah.
Until y'all brought that up.
John L., how are the pigs doing? Don't you have to work to keep them warm during these real cold, cold spells?
How what? It's been hard.
I went by the other day, and I could swore I saw Wilbur out there with a jacket on.
No, well, Wilbur's been in the barn.
He's got his own heater, doesn't he?
Yes, yes. In fact, I took last week, somebody went so bad, that Tyvek they wrap houses with and put over half the barn. And that's the only thing that kind of kept us. We got out to about 37.
Well, Wilbur gets special treatment. He's got hot and cold running water and a heater.
He does. He really does.
He's
got the cutest little spider over on top
water.
Of it.
He's proud of it.
I still think that's third generation, Wilbur.
No. Wilbur's starting to look old.
Wilbur's looking old. He's 8 and a half years old.
Oh, yeah, bless his heart. How is the Farmer of the Year doing?
Doing fine. He's doing real good. He's in San Diego this week.
Naturally.
That does sound like he's doing good. Yeah.
What?
I got all the work.
Yeah, I don't understand it. He's out traveling all over the world promoting farming, and he gets all the awards, and you're the one sitting there working.
Well, you know, it's always, you always got to have somebody in the background.
Yeah, yeah. Bless your heart.
Somebody's got to actually produce the bacon.
Yeah, yeah. But
hey,
not
I'll
Wilbur.
Let y'all go and get on back to your show. That's real good, but I was real familiar with Consumer Ice Cream, and I don't know. The building stayed empty there for a long time before they tore it down.
Yeah, and I hadn't.
Because we sold milk up there until about 80, 81.
Well, I don't think the building lasted that long.
But the building been torn down long for that.
Yeah.
Hey, John, says I got you on, tell me where you guys are selling your products now, because I have had a lot of people tell me in the restaurants and things like that they want to go locally, and a lot of them are using the things that you're growing over there.
Yes. Where they can buy it themselves, one of the best places, quickest to get to, is Fire Brothers Hardware. Pa Bunks on the Square.
Yeah.
Has it, and then we're still open on the farm on Fridays from 2 to 6 and 9 to 1 on Saturday mornings.
All right. Good.
And take a book. Yeah, we've got Five Senses opossums.
The one in Woodbury, the blue pork.
Yeah, I'm leaving out several. And we got two or three in Nashville.
Yeah. Well, we're lucky to have you here, big boy.
Well, hey, Truman, you and I are just lucky to still be here.
Yeah, you're right about that, especially with the flu season right in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Well, you guys stay safe.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Greg. Keep up the good work.
All right. Thank you, John L.
And that was John L. Beatty, one of our good friends.
That was the commercial for the hour?
No. The commercial for the hour is Metal Max Roofing and Siding. Of course, that's your sponsors, and it's located at 900 Captain Joe Fulgham Drive, just off Middle Tennessee Boulevard, right here in Murfreesboro. Steel is a unique material that can be recycled, conserving energy and natural resources. Steel is also an excellent cost-effective alternative to asphalt shingle roofs. Metal roofs are beautiful, resistant to wind damage, roof rust, some less expensive than asphalt shingles. They offer factory direct pricing so you can buy your roofing and siding materials straight from the manufacturer without the middleman. Go by and see their friendly staff today and let them show you over 20 different colors of Metal Max roofing and siding. Give them a call today at 494-1693, 494-1693. Pull them up on the website, www.metalmaxllc.com.
This is Rick Ensel. Don't miss a minute of Middle Tennessee basketball this season.
Basketball season is underway, but it's not too late to get season tickets for men's and women's basketball at Middle Tennessee. There's still plenty of great non-conference home games remaining on both schedules, as well as the ultra-competitive Conference USA schedule. The fan comforts have never been better following a $12 million renovation to Murphy Center. To get your season tickets, contact the Blue Raider ticket office at 1-888-YES-MTSU or log on to GoBlueRaiders.com and click on tickets.
You can get non-medical care at home for you and your loved one. Just visit AtHomeCareTN.com.
My name is Cheryl Bradley, and I've been with At Home Care for 4 years. I'm the Director of Care Coordination. And one of the things that we do here at Home Care is we take the time to get to know our clients and match them with one of our home care aides. And we have 120-plus home care aides, so we try to make sure the personalities and the type of services are matched properly.
Here's Melissa Warren with At Home Care.
The one thing that I think really sets At Home Care apart is that we understand we may not be the answer for everyone that phones us, but our goal is to help everyone that phones us, give them direction, give them information, maybe lead them to where they do need to call to get the help they need.
That's athomecaretn.com.
Murfreesboro Outdoors is the leading provider of hunting supplies, fishing equipment, and gun sales in Middle Tennessee, providing quality products and over 50 years of knowledge and experience, making Murfreesboro Outdoors the only store you need for hunting, fishing, and firearm supplies. Visit them at 2204 Broad Street in Murfreesboro, online at mburrooutdoors.com.
I'm Randy Bowling from Murfreesboro Outdoors. I keep my store open Monday through Saturday from 9 to 6 in Murfreesboro on Northwest Broad Street.
Meet and greet author Susan Gregg Gilmore. I'm Ron Jordan on News Radio WGNS. Friends of the Lineball Library hosting author Susan Gregg Gilmore at the annual Members Luncheon January 24th at 11 o'clock at the Women's Club on East College Street in Murfreesboro. Gilmore is the author of Looking for Salvation at the Dairy Queen, The Funeral Dress, and other books set in the South and dealing with women coming of age. Reservations may be made at the Lineball Circulation Desk. Costs and other information available at our website, WGNSradio.com. Members of the Tennessee General Assembly, the Governor's Cabinet, and the Supreme Court will join the state's constitutional officers and the Attorney General in a major effort to restock Tennessee's food banks. The Campaign Against Hunger event, which is sponsored by state lawmakers in conjunction with Outreach Incorporated, will take place on Friday at 10 a.m. in the War Memorial Auditorium in Nashville. The group will package about 50,000 meals for food banks serving all 95 Tennessee counties. Organizers say the event is timely, as stock in the pantries is usually low after the holiday season.
Laverne has been named the best place for young families to live in Rutherford County by NerdWallet, a consumer advocacy website. NerdWallet based its rankings on the following criteria: home affordability, prosperity and growth, quality of education, and family friendliness. Laverne ranked as the 17th best place to live in Tennessee. It joined 8 other cities in Middle Tennessee to make the top 20 list, including Mount Juliet, Nolensville, and Spring Hill. Smyrna came in at number 26. Murfreesboro ranked number 36. That's the news you need to know. I'm Ron Jordan on News Radio WGNS.
Local news sponsored by Kestner Chiropractic and Acupuncture Center.
Frequent headaches can be caused by many conditions, and I can help you find relief. Call 895-1253 for a free consultation. Kestner Chiropractic and Acupuncture Center.
Weatherwise.
Cloudy skies here for this afternoon with temperatures holding rather steady. Winds out of the north at 10 to 15 miles per hour, gusting as high as 20. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki on News Radio WGNS. Right now, 30.
So glad I went to Murfreesboro Outdoors. They point me to everything I need to be ready for the hunt. I get all my seasonings off the hot sauce wall there.
I'm Randy Bowling from Murfreesboro Outdoors. I keep my store open Monday through Saturday from 9 to 6 in Murfreesboro on Northwest Broad Street.
The Truman Show on News Radio WGNS, FM 100.5, FM 101.9, AM 1450, online and on your phone at WGNSradio.com.
And welcome back to the Greg Tucker Show. We have another caller on the line. Caller, welcome aboard with Greg Tucker.
Hey, Truman.
Hey.
Hey, I believe that movie you were asking about earlier was The Big Sleep.
You got it. You got it.
Yeah, Bogart was playing Philip Marlowe.
Yeah.
Which a bunch of actors have played that detective. But
That was a great movie. Did you see it?
Parts of it.
Yeah. Oh, no. I couldn't take my eyes off the screen when I was watching that.
Yeah, well, you know, it's those old classic movies, I love them, but, you know, a little before my time.
Oh, they've been on TV. Big Sleep's been on TV a dozen times in my life.
Yeah, Turner Classic Movies, right. Usually.
Yeah.
Tune it in.
I'm like you, Truman. I wish they would bring back all those old cowboy movies.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like Matinee of the Bijou.
Oh, cowboy. Yeah. Remember them well. I mean, I can remember those movies just like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
Well, they were, you know, there's a lot of gunslinging and stuff like that. But there was something about them that it didn't have all the other negative things that go on in movies right now.
Right. Now, they still, I don't know if you have, I have Dish Network, and they still air The Lone Ranger and Roy Rogers every day.
Ah. See, I've got AT&T.
Oh.
You first. Now, I could pay extra for it, and I'm thinking about doing it because I know Terry Malone has that Western channel, and he watches it all the time, and I probably would be too. I mean, there's just something. You can't get the kid out of a man. What do they say? In every 80-year-old man, there's a 17-year-old kid. Well, I think it's more like a 10-year-old kid.
Hey, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll let y'all go.
All right. Thank you for calling.
You know, out in Donald's Chapel, we can't get cable. They never strung a cable out that way, and we only get 3 out of about 5 broadcast channels, but I got a couple of neighbors put up those satellite dishes.
Oh, those illegal ones?
I don't know whether they're illegal or not. I'm not in active practice anymore.
Well, you know, living out where you do, you're almost in like living when I was a kid out at Readable, where we didn't have electricity. Of course, you've got electricity, and you probably don't have a 2-seater behind your house. But you think about all the luxuries that we did have.
2-seater? You talking about a sports car?
Yeah, that's where you got to read. It was more like that's what, really a library back in those days.
I've still got the little 1-seater house, but we keep the garden tools in there now.
Oh, that's a shame. You should utilize them for what they were built for.
I have to dig it out again.
But you think about it. You got all the things. You have the privacy out there there's very little movement with cars. I mean, when I go through, I almost never see a car between Big Springs Road and maybe going all the way out to Readable. It's rare.
Well, yeah, coming out the driveway, if I have to pause for another car, it's a traffic jam.
Well, now tell me about some of the things that I know that you're still riding, and I don't know why, but I keep going back and referring to Rutherford Ramblings when I'm trying to catch up on some of the history. And I always read something that maybe I've missed or whatever like that. And, you know, one of the areas that I miss probably more than any other, and I don't know why, because I've been in most of them, is the caves in Rutherford County. I didn't realize that there were so many and how they're connected. Now, I know one, the one out at Rockville and Snail Shell Cave.
Yeah, that's right.
A dangerous cave.
Yeah, that's what we call a wet cave, because to really explore the cave, you got to go in there with a raft and raft through it. There's a book that Snail Shell Cave, it's local published, a picture book, and done by some of our local cavers, spelunkers. Mm-hmm. I know it's in the library, and it is incredible to think that we have that kind of a natural formations in Rutherford County. But I think we probably have more than just that cave, that they're obviously much more difficult to get to. But part of what was very, very interesting in there is they trace the water sources and where it goes. And on that water system, that cave system of water, it comes up in several more of our sinkholes and others before it finally gets over to the Stones River. And, in fact, one that was particularly intriguing was the old MTSC, I guess, farm out there on towards Blackman.
Mm-hmm.
That's the same water course as what's coming out of the cave. That cave is our probably most storied. And, of course, you probably remember when you were with the sheriff's department having to –
many times.
Yeah, pull the kids out of there that don't know any better. And the second most famous cave is the Black Cat, just in terms of public interest. And intrigued me that I found out the Black Cat wasn't even on the cave list that the state puts out. Now, that list is not intended to be complete. They kind of highlight caves in each of the counties. But they didn't have the Black Cat, which originally was called the Rainbow Cave.
Mm-hmm.
But the Black Cat was, in a sense, sealed up back in the 20s when they built the first tavern down in there. And right now, I don't know whether the work's been completed, but a team of specialists out of MTSU mm-hmm. have gone beyond the part that was closed up back into the cave, and they're finding prehistory relics and such. I'm looking forward to a detailed report on what we've learned about perhaps the primitive cultures or pre-Columbian cultures that might have used that cave.
Before Ma Neely had it.
Yeah, and Ma Neely, I think, followed. I talked to somebody who I heard was part of the family that put it together, and I don't think our former Mayor Reeves wants to be identified, but, excuse me.
Where did that come from?
But one story is that I think...
Sorry, Richard.
Yeah, I think it was Richard's grandfather was involved with it when it was first turned into a tavern,
mm-hmm.
Along with other prominent names in the area. But, you know, your show gets an awful lot of exposure, and it's been great to focus the interest on some of our local history. But I got a call a couple of weeks ago from a fellow who said he enjoyed the show, and he loves to talk about history, and he had some stories to tell.
Well, wow.
That's throwing prime bait in front of me, so
yeah.
I went over and visited with him. And the column that appeared this past Sunday was based on what William Crockett remembered. His nickname was Pumpkin then, and he says he enjoys being called Pumpkin now. So Pumpkin, if you're listening, I appreciate you being aggressive about making contact and telling me some of your stories, because Pumpkin was born and raised on the old what was then called the county farm.
Now, that's a story in itself.
Oh, fascinating stories. He was able to help me put together the history of the farm after 1900. And you know, in about 1900 and up to about 1906, there was an awful lot of, you could call it mismanagement, but a sense of corruption. There were some people exploiting the production out there because, of course, back then it was a real farm. Mm-hmm. And had been, that was, if people know where the county farm was, County Farm Road is now called Joby Jackson. Part of it's still County Farm. But that was actually the third location. Mm-hmm. The first one was out in some of our neighborhood on Cripple Creek. Mm-hmm. And then the second location was between Woodbury Pike and Braidable Pike on one of the Cripple Creek branches. Neither one of those was productive. It's so rocky and rough.
Yeah, I can attest to that. That's where my mom was raised.
So in the late 1890s, the county, trying to make it a self-sustaining operation, bought the property over there between what was already the railroad right-of-way and the Middle Fork. Mm-hmm. Some good fertile land in there. And that was to reestablish the poorhouse. And people have said, you know, they call it the poorhouse. That doesn't sound very nice. Well, we weren't so politically correct back then. The statute that set up the program, I guess one of our first welfare statutes, was written in 1828. Hmm. And it specified that each county should establish a poorhouse and authorize the counties to levy special taxes to support the poorhouse. And you actually had a county commission, which was called the Poorhouse Commission. And it was these commissioners in the early 1900s that apparently were the root of the problem. So they cleared out the commissioners and reappointed. The quarterly court reappointed all new poorhouse commissioners.
Things never changed, did they?
Yeah. Always the potential.
Yeah.
But they also hired another superintendent. They fired the superintendent and hired another one. And his name was Raleigh Holden. Would be a familiar name to many of us.
Yeah.
Raleigh Holden's nephew was named for his uncle, also a Raleigh Holden, and that Raleigh Holden started a hardware store on the square in 1948, and his son, good friend of mine.
We've all been there.
Yeah, still managing it. If you can't find it anywhere else, it'll be over there at the Holden Hardware Store.
He's probably got sleds out there trying to sell right now.
He's got sleds.
Yeah.
He sure does. But they brought in Superintendent Holden. And he was scrupulous in his accounting and keeping up, and he put the thing on a self-sustaining basis. And but what he also did, he and his wife had hearts as big as all outdoors.
That's what you need in that business.
Yeah, and he brought with him a foster child, a black named James Banks.
Mm-hmm.
And that child grew up there with them, and by the time my friend Pumpkin came in there, Banks was essentially the assistant superintendent managing the farm activity and such.
Yeah, no, I like that. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, and then another one named Willie Wade, mm-hmm. up in was raised up in Cemetery, got in trouble when he was a young teenager, mm-hmm. and was committed to the workhouse, and. Coincidentally, Raleigh Holden's brother, Charles, was the superintendent of the workhouse. And he looked at this young teen, probably 13 or 14, and felt like keeping him in the environment of the workhouse with the adult inmates there was the wrong thing to do. So he called his brother, and his brother took Willie. And Willie Wade became... this is Pumpkin's phrase, chief cook and bottle washer out there. Lived the rest of his life out there. In fact, I learned just recently that Willie Wade's granddaughter is still working out there. But by the time we get into the 20s, they're trying to change the image a little, and they're calling it the county farm. And I think they even changed the title of the commission and such to county farm. And there are some sad stories about Charlie was killed there by a mentally retarded resident trying to break up a fight. A lot of the population back in the teens and 20s were suffering with syphilis. Mm. There was no cure at the time, or no real cure. And Pumpkin talks about riding on top of the old casket when they would take a deceased resident up on the they had their own, apparently they had their own cemetery, which is now on what you and I remember as the Stuart Maples farm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He'd ride on the casket up there, and he remembered that a lot of them got buried just in a blanket. In fact, Pumpkin quoted Dust to Dust for me, because the way they've had to bury some of them. But, you know, Pumpkin is a good few years older than we are, but he said in his lifetime, I remember his statement says, "I may not make it to the next one, but I had heaven on earth as a child because I lived on the farm. I had people to play with. I had all the good food I could eat, people that took care of me. They sent me to school. They tutored me." In fact, his, what we'd call a tutor, the person who worked with him on his homework when he was little, was the wife of our only black Confederate veteran.
Wow.
Yeah. Uncle Albert's wife.
Mm-hmm.
Was still out there. Uncle Albert had died, but she stayed there and worked a lot with the children that were there. Because, you know, I would not have thought about children being born and raised there.
No.
But Uncle Albert's wife was the midwife, and she delivered probably several children out there. And it's a great story. And then, of course, that the county farm evolved into community care, and now a nursing home.
Mark King's over it now.
Yeah, Mark King, he's the one that contacted me because he says that they are cleaning up and maintaining the cemetery and are working out with the Maples family so they'll have an easement or access to maintain the cemetery. And
can we see the cemetery? Because I drive through there all the time, and I don't think I've ever seen it.
I have not, and I want to get over there and walk around and see what's there. I doubt that many of them were given permanent markers.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe it's even on the cemetery map that the county is developing. That's still a work in progress, but I don't think it's on there yet. I asked Mark, emailed him last night, and asked him if it has a name that we could look for, you know, such and such cemetery, and I hadn't heard back. But I was delighted to know that Mark's aware of where it is, and they're taking some steps to clean it up and preserve it.
Actually, it makes me feel good that he's aware of all that and taking care of it. Sometimes you think of those type homes, you think of them with sadness. You and I talked about that earlier. But there's something really special. I mean, when you're talking to Pumpkin, and then he's adding the history on to what happened there in such a positive way, it really makes you feel good. I mean, you can think the way that he's approached life is a whole lot better than a whole lot many of the rest of us.
Well, growing up right there on the Middle Fork of the Stones River, you know you could enjoy some good fishing back in those days. And he said he fished a lot in that river.
And watch the cars being washed down the creek as they try to cross that bridge when they shouldn't be trying to.
Yeah, that, I think they were smarter back then because the horses would shy.
Can you think of, are there many other bridges like that in Tennessee where you just have the one lane bridge? And, you know, one thing it shows is courtesy from people. Because a lot of times you might back up five or six cars, and what they try to do is they'll let one go through on one side, and then when he gets through, the other one on the other side will go, and everybody keeps their little place. And you know, it's a lesson for a lot of people to learn when they're out on the major highways.
All right. And, you know, there's no policeman down there directing traffic. It's a matter of thinking about the other guy and you know, being polite about it.
Now, on the... Well, maybe not the next show, but somewhere along the line, you are going to find that cemetery, right?
Oh, yeah. We're going to go down there and stomp around and look at it. Cemeteries.
He hasn't told you exactly on which side of the road it is or anything like that, because well, I know pumpkin, where the Maples house is, but
yeah,
I'm not sure.
And land titles have changed over in that area, but Pumpkin says if you leave the county farm property, community care, heading towards Rucker, which is the next whistle stop down the railroad, it would be to your left. So that makes it kind of southeast of
the that's across the road from where Maples is. Well, I go through there all the time, and I'm always looking because the weeds kind of grow up pretty high through there. So you have very little sight to what's going on in those particular areas, and I don't think I'd want to walk. Of course, walking through there in the wintertime wouldn't be too bad.
Yeah, I was going to say winter is the best time to go out working on a cemetery.
So what else are you working on? I know that you were working on a book. And I can't remember what the
we've got several. There's I'm going to do one. I've got a good part of it written on our some of our veterans, including
That's
my
great.
Father. We will do another Rutherford something another book collection of stories. Probably 2 years off on that. And there's always something going. Always something going. I talked to a lady yesterday who lives in an ancient log house that was moved down here when they created the land between the lakes. Mm-hmm. And interesting story and history there, too. It ranges from what I would call the macro, the big history, such as the Civil War, down to micro, such as individual stories of individual places. The latter particularly appeals to me because many times nothing has been written. There's no, you know, this is history that's going to be lost, such as the stories that Pumpkin tells. But it's fun every once in a while to take one of the big events that we've all heard about and see if you can't parse out details that we hadn't known before. And during this sesquicentennial of the Civil War, that's been interesting.
You know, I know that you have been approached by this sometime before, but one of the more interesting families, of course, in the history of Rutherford County has been the Murphys. And we lost one of the Murphys not too long ago, Matt. And what a great guy, you know. I remember him growing up and some of the things that he did. But the Murphy family is a very interesting tale that could easily be put into print, I would think, because of I knew Matt's daddy, loved him to death, Dr. Murphy, and he was one of my favorite people because I dealt with him a number of times. He did the medical examiner work and things like that, and I have never known anybody that was so easy to get along with, and he utilized his work in such a, I shouldn't say simplistic because it really doesn't fit, but it was just a natural thing for him. And I don't know how many times I saw him out with his dam over there across from where the co-op was back there. I think it was that was his way to get away from all the hubbub that was going on around him, because I know he was busy all the time. I would love to see something like that in print. Matt's one of those people that's really going to be missed here.
Well, yeah, Matt and I worked on several projects. In fact, there is a connection that I still don't fully understand. I hope I can follow up with some of his files. The Bell family, the presidential candidate that lost to Abe Lincoln, has a connection there. And I think Matt had done some research on that. I hope to run that down and follow that up, because you know that campaign against Abraham Lincoln started here in Rutherford County, because Bell was from the Nolensville area, and he launched his campaign down here. And Matt and I, last time we talked, were talking about that. But the Murphys, each generation has a different, an interesting story. The J.B. Murphy, he was the assistant number two guy in the entire Confederate medical establishment in the Confederacy, and of course Hardy Murphy, our namesake, and then it branches off in fascinating family. I've written two or three, four different stories about different aspects of the family.
And you still got Bob to talk to.
Yeah, Bob's still with it. And Brick is very conscientious about his family's background and all. And glad that we got another generation.
Oh, we'll have many generations after this one.
Yep.
Well, great show. Great show. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back with Greg Tucker.
If you are looking for a place to get well before returning home or to assisted living, look no further than Northside Healthcare Nursing and Rehabilitation Center.
I think Northside is a great place to be. I admire it for everything that it stands for, I'll tell you. All the staff is fantastic.
At Northside, they work to ensure that their residents receive the very best medical care possible.
I don't think there's any other place that would do any better than this one anywhere.
On East MTCS Drive, beside Middle Tennessee Christian School.
This is Sheila at Ryan Flowers and Gifts, and flowers are a wonderful way to tell someone how you feel. Fresh Cut, we have roses, we have other bright colored flowers, we have balloons, stuffed animals, box chocolates of South's Finest Chocolates, which are made in Tennessee. We have silk arrangements as well. We also do combos, like if you want bear and candy. This is Sheila from Ryan's Flowers and Gifts, located at 117 South Academy Street in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Our phone number, 615-893-7134.
Drought and cold weather are problems that keep you from getting the best results from your crops. Inflation and economic uncertainty are factors that might keep you from getting better results from your investments. This is Lee Colvin at Edward Jones. While I can't help you with the weather, I can review your investments and find ways to help you save money with tax-advantaged investments and prepare for retirement. Call me at 907-7056. Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing, member SIPC.
News Radio WGNS, Murfreesboro. The Truman Show on News Radio WGNS, FM 100.5, FM 101.9, AM 1450. Online and on your phone at WGNSradio.com.
And back with Greg Tucker. What's going on tonight?
Well, the Sons of Confederate Veterans, our local camp, which is descended directly from the veterans' local camp, the United Confederate Veterans, which was organized back in 1888. And when they first organized the veterans group here, and you notice it was a good almost 25 years after the war ended, they made arrangements to meet monthly at the courthouse. Mm-hmm. And the Sons of Confederate Veterans, the successor organization, is still meeting monthly at our courthouse. So 7 o'clock tonight, Sons of Confederate Veterans have their meeting and have a guest speaker who's going to talk about the military campaign from Murfreesboro to Chattanooga, actually between the Battle of Stones River and Chickamauga. Chickamauga, you know, was the last major big victory of the Confederate Army.
Now, the Sons of the Confederacy, when you join that, just like I guess when you join any group, all the way back to the Revolutionary War, you know, we have groups. Is that a way to keep history alive in its right place and still honor those veterans?
That's exactly the mission of the Sons of Confederate Veterans, is to continue to remember, study, and involve others in the history of the Confederacy. And anytime you see, I think, the first Sunday of this month, the Sons did the memorial out at the cemetery, mm-hmm. where several thousand unknown and quite a few that we do know the names of are buried. And when we open Cannonsburg, there will be a reenactment there of a camp, and all the reenactments. The Sons are very, very active in that. But it is to keep alive that part of our history and to keep people aware and to help them understand, you know, what was the real history apart from the legends and distortions that we hear.
You know, that is part of why a lot of times it's hard to heal wounds after things like that have happened, because there are so many parts of history that are skewed, mm-hmm. and it is, of course, people are going to utilize things to make things worse no matter what. But depends on what their particular goals are.
Right. Well, I guess there is a tendency to try to twist history to meet your current objective.
Yes.
And that bothers me a lot. But and you also run into what you and I are particularly sensitive about, what I call political correctness. I have recently rewritten two pieces because the publishers just were uneasy, and yet in no way was there anything that should be offensive. But the fact that somebody's name back then was their given name that they used, but today it doesn't sound right. So we're not going to acknowledge that that was actually the name, and those kind of things bother me. But hopefully,
people got along a whole lot better before political correctness.
Yeah, and this business about we don't want to offend anybody. Well, you offend me because you're suppressing or mm-hmm. altering or manipulating history because you don't want to offend somebody. Come on, that should be offensive to all of us. Our history is our history.
Well, I guess it depends on where you stand, but I was not happy when the leader of our country did not go to France and stand with everybody shoulder to shoulder to support one of our oldest allies. They may be our oldest ally because they were basically on our side during the original war that we were in with the English.
Right. Well, even if our number one leader is unable to go,
you send
the Secretary of State, or you send the Vice President.
Yeah.
We sent the Attorney General, who has absolutely nothing to do with foreign affairs or shouldn't have anything to do with it, and he's a lame duck. He's resigned.
Yeah.
And then he doesn't even go to the celebration. Excuse me for getting worked up. But
they're
afraid
to mention the name Muslim in the terrorist. I mean, I don't understand what the thought of it. It really doesn't. We're in a war, guys.
Well, and we end up apologizing to our ally over there, so I don't know.
Things, well, we should apologize to them.
Yeah, next time if they'll check with you or me, I think we can help them do the right thing.
Yeah, we'll go over and take out about 30 more ISIS people for them.
Speaking of doing the right thing, a friend of yours, a friend of the show, is has a birthday today.
Uh-huh.
Judge Don Ash.
Oh, happy birthday, Judge. All right, come on, let's go, Greg.
Happy birthday to you.
Join in, Brian.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, dear Judge Don Ash. Happy birthday to you.
That'll teach
him. And a whole lot more.
I'm sorry about that.
That'll teach him. He won't tell us next time.
You'll keep your mouth shut from now on. Monty Hale just walked in. He could have joined. You want to sing again, Monty?
Oh, no.
No.
We got to go.
All right, guys. You guys have a great day.